David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 386. I'm your host, Steve Raker, maintaining the multiversal library here in my comic book bunker, along with Whirlwind, a.k.a. WWX Kevin, who protects the northern nexus of reality from his stronghold amongst the lakes and maple syrup country.
Wow. I mean, I guess that bunker takes on a whole new meaning nowadays.
Right? Well, I hope not. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. Our scope is all things Marvel, with a personal bias at least for the Bronze Age, although Kevin came in around the 90s, so that's his golden age.
Well, we'll just say it is.
You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on marvelnoise.com. There's a handy little calendar-style drop-down menu on the right-hand side to easily navigate past months and years. You can get new episode announcements, give us feedback, and see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages, and find other fine podcasts from our benefactor in the shadows, Derek Coward, and his Deliberate Noise Network, especially Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show, which is hitting episode 500 any day now, right, Kevin?
Yeah, any day now. That sounds good.
So check that out. All right, this episode's feature segment is part two of our deep dive into the wax and wanes of the Mark Spector Moon Knight series. First, though, we're the warm-up act, Kevin.
Yeah, I like how you said wax and wanes, because I kind of feel like that's the book we're going to talk about.
And it's good that we're the warm-up act, I think, because we need to talk.
whoa, what?
it's the Avengers the last few months. We haven't caught up on this in any of our recent reads, and Jason Aaron's Avengers has reached issue 50. And beyond now, but issue 50 was also the legacy numbering issue 750.
Yeah.
And for a milestone issue, they chose to make it both a finale of an arc and a setup of the next status quo and arc happening. They kind of did a coda to the World War She-Hulk epic, and now with her new status quo set up just in time for her solo series, they launch into the next direction of the book, which is with a future Deathlok showing up and having like a dire message and warning. And not only that, but there's like multiple Deathloks showing up from the future. Then there's this Doom above all. a Doctor Doom, that is.
Yeah.
And he's watching the first Avengers, like the primitive Avengers, like the Odin and dinosaur riding Ghost Rider and stuff from, you know, that we've saw way back in Aaron's maybe first Avengers issue, or maybe even the Free Comic Book Day before that.
Yeah, that seems to make sense, but I feel like enough time has passed that we're like, how long has this been going on?
Yeah,
for?
Right?
But didn't they name themselves the Avengers of 1 million BC or something?
Right. But it's interesting that they're finally getting to that. what was the significance of all that? We kind of it was just sort of a dalliance, almost a little thing that they kind of did every once in a while, and it's just like, is he using this as a kind of a framing for what? And was it all just for the whole Phoenix Thor thing, or
yeah,
hard to know. And now we see it developing more, because Mephisto meets with this Doom above all as a snake and suggests to Doom that maybe he should build a team of interdimensional bad guys and stop the Avengers before they ever get to their avenging.
I'm glad it wasn't our Doom, because when I saw that cover, I was just like, I don't know. And then the armor was a little weird, because it was that sort of like skin suit, and I'm like,
right,
where are they going with? Like, that's not the best teaser for me. But then if it's another Doom, then it's sort of like, oh, all bets are off.
And Doom does just what Mephisto suggests and collects and creates the multiversal masters of evil, Kevin. And surprisingly, there's no Crimson Cowl among them.
Well, they have enough kooky members anyways.
And Mephisto also demands that the 616, our universe, get saved for last as they go around and conquer all the other ones. And
I'm like, that's pretty kind.
What's he? He's up to something, though. Like,
maybe.
He's got an angle. So the multiversal masters of evil are this Doom Supreme, Kid Thanos.
You mean that Kid Thanos?
That Kid Thanos, because Aaron wrote him at that age in that limited series, right? And really got into who he was at the time that he was carving up his mom.
That's right. And then Donnie Cates sort of ran with some of those ideas.
Exactly. Then there's also a venomized Red Skull, a Green Goblin Ghost Rider amalgamation, a Killmonger in an Asgardian Destroyer armor, and a Phoenix that seems like it's a combo of Phoenix and, is it Madam Mask or Destiny? One of those.
Yeah.
It's not clear, but she's got like a feral Wolverine on a leash. And, you know, let's face it, creators have really no incentive to create new characters these days, even though some do. So why not just combine a whole bunch and make it? And, you know, we see it a lot, and sometimes it's just fluff, and sometimes it has some meat attached to it, and these feel like this was intriguing to me.
Yeah, I think some of these are more interesting, or I think some of these are sometimes born out of like the variant covers, or like, well, we need a theme, and then sometimes I can birth a character.
Also, Deathlok, or one of the Deathloks, takes the Robbie Rees Ghost Rider to the 818 universe, where the heroes have been wiped out, like at that BC Avengers time.
What's the 818?
The 818. And that side trip continues in the Avengers Forever title that I get to in a few. Then also the Orb shows up. You know, Jason Aaron's bringing in all his guys. The Orb shows up and confronts Doom Supreme in the 616 and meets his fate.
I mean, who cares about the Orb?
Mommy! And this is all in issue 50, Kevin. It's ridiculous. And then there's this whole also thing where Kazar gets lost in time.
Yeah.
Stranded, in fact. He gets stranded to die at a time when Galactus is about to eat the planet.
Well, maybe he can use all those new powers that he got, right, Steve?
He makes the bargain. And he's now like this this multiversal Herald of Galactus. Crazy. Quite an issue, 50, 750, however you want to look at it. But then Avengers 51 is part one of the Death Hunters arc, which is currently three issues in at the time we're recording this, with art by Juan Figueri, who does a real nice job.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar, but yeah, I mean, definitely a step above of, I guess it's Avengers, you just can't put anyone on this book, right?
And the thrust of what this arc seems to be is that the multiversal Masters of Evil are chasing Deathloks as they appear two various groups of Avengers, because the Avengers are kind of separated at this time. Not like they're not a team, but they just happen to be in different locations in little subgroups. And the Deathlocks are kind of appearing and appealing to them for protection and trying to give them information about this, the MMOE, who are traveling around destroying universes. And a few of the Masters of Evil are in pursuit of each of them, so we get some confrontations. Not the whole group against the whole group, but in 51 we get the King Killmonger and the Phoenix with the pet Wolverine attacking Thor and Iron Man. They're like, ooh, they still have a Thor? You know? And
yeah.
The X-Factor here is the Echo Phoenix character helps out.
And yeah, that's still a little weird for me. You know, and it might be, like, for a long time, because I enjoy seeing Deathlock, but
yeah,
it's still, compared to what I'm, like, used to, like, years ago, it's still a little weird, like, even though we've gotten all these different Deathlocks, or lots of Deathlocks showing up for, like, years and years now.
Yeah, Deathlocks have become, like, Xenomorphs or something, where there's like a whole bunch of them running around, and if you have six bullets in a gun, you can kill six Deathlocks, and they're kind of cannon fodder. But they are sent by this mysterious Avenger Prime.
Who's Avenger Prime?
Who seems to operate out of the God Quarry.
Yeah. It's Luther Manning. I hope I didn't spoil something.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That would be so cool. But, you know, this with the Echo Phoenix, like, now that they've... In that first Jason Aaron, whether it was the Free Comic Day or Issue 1 or whatever, you know, they had Odin and the Phoenix kind of, like, kissing, right?
Yeah.
And it's finally come around to what that all meant, and the outcome and aftershocks of some of the revelations revolving that. Captain America and Captain Marvel are kind of like trying to nurture the Star Brand kid along in issue 52. Now, she's kind of feisty, but, you know, she could still be mentored if you're kind of, you know, honest and sincere in the way that you're doing it, but the Deathlocks show up, and then they get attacked by the venomized Red Skull and the Ghost Goblin.
And that Ghost Goblin.
Whose pumpkin bombs are the heads of all other Ghost Riders across the multiverse that he's killed.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. And I mean, I feel like this whole book is just you took a bucket of crazy, and yeah, you just poured it all over, and they're like, hey, what are these wild things we can do here?
Yup. And in this confrontation, the Star Brand is, like, super powerful, and things happen with her character arc in this issue that are important for sure. In issue 53, the Black Panther, Namor, and the Jane Foster Valkyrie, and a Deathlock, are attacked at the Avengers headquarters, Avengers Mountain, Avengers Tower, whatever you call it now, by Doom Supreme and Kid Thanos, and it's pretty intense.
I would say it's Buck Wild. Buck Wild, Steve.
Meanwhile, in the pages of Avengers Forever, which is also written by Aaron and drawn by Aaron Cooter, the Robbie Reese Ghost Rider and a Deathlock fight on the wastelands of this Earth 818. Where the venomized Red Skull rules, and they get captured and tortured, and we find out more about what Robbie Reese's Ghost Rider is, which is nice.
Yeah, I'm happy to see him still around. Like, there's a Ghost Rider book, but for this book, I mean, he's a Ghost Rider I want to hear about, want to see. Just a typical buddy comedy in here, right?
Yeah, there's those aspects of it, but there's a lot of dread happening around them. I mean, the Ghost Rider getting his leg sawed off just a little each day, because that's all the progress the skull can make. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
There are a few heroes left on this world, though, Kevin. There's Tony Stark, the Ant-Man.
What?
And a couple other, my favorite being the Infinity Thing, who floats around and makes cryptic statements. His, like, posture and everything is just really funny to me. But it is cool that they're investing time and pages to develop Robbie Reese's character, especially as an Avenger.
And I love that car. The car that went underwater.
Learning more about the car, learning more about... I mean, even Robbie's learning more about himself. And again, what his Ghost Rider is, how it connects to everything else. And not to go too much into DC land, but my friend Philip Kennedy Johnson is writing Superman in Action Comics right now. And there are aspects of this tale that remind me of what I am enjoying about that Action Comics run that he's doing right now, the War World saga. He has Superman dealing with a planet run by Mongol, and he's kind of depowered and imprisoned, and people around him, you know, there's psychological torture, there's he's got to fight in an arena and that kind of stuff. And I've never been a month-to-month Superman reader, really, ever. And my friend's writing it, so I wanted to check this out, and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm seeing the same kind of, like, there's a thing where Superman could be rescued and get out of there. And he's depowered, he's suffering, he's bleeding, he's beaten down. And he's like, no, I need to stay and, like, rally these people and help somehow. It's like, help, you're about to die any day here. And Superman chooses to stay and uses his other quote-unquote powers, right? Just his ability to inspire, you know, the Captain America thing where he can raise up the shield and start a revolution kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And we get some of that same... that's a powerful character trait, right? And we're seeing some of those same traits displayed in Robbie, who gets the same offer. Ant-Man comes and says, hey, let's get out of here. And he's like, no, I need to stay and see this out. And it's pretty intense. Just saying.
It's an intense book.
It is. It's good, though. And I don't know, is Avengers Forever going to continue after this Masters of Evil stuff is over and then just be like a side book that can tell side stories that we don't have time for in the pages of the main book?
I don't know, because you can't think of it as like what you've heard for Avengers Forever before on that limited series.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the first issue kind of shows you all the Avengers and kind of gives you an ink. I mean, maybe they'll still go there, right? Like, maybe, like, we'll still have, like, oh, we need 100 Avengers, and they'll do some, like, that's still out there. But I feel like if you knew anything about the Avengers Forever title and you saw, like, 100 Avengers on the cover, you're like, oh, maybe it will be something like the original series. But then I feel like you get into here, there's, like, basically your two heroes, and then it's like, oh, this is a completely different book. It's almost like Avengers : Ghost Rider, or fabulous adventures of Ghost Rider and Deathlok.
What if that cover with all of the heroes on it was showing the possibilities?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like an Avengers spotlight, almost like a modern Avengers spotlight book.
I mean, you could take it that way, like an Avengers team-up thing, but we'll see if it's just like 6 issues or...
Because I'm not someone who totally goes wild with trying to look far ahead in the news to know, you know, beyond the solicits of like next month, I really don't look very far ahead, so I don't have a sense of how long this whole multiversal Masters of Evil thing is. This going to be an ongoing thing where this is just the first salvo and then we get some side arcs and then it gets back to this and this thread is always in the background? Or is this getting right to where it is going to go and then we'll get to a different arc and Avengers Forever will have to end or change its focus as well? I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like it needs to expand outward somewhere if it's going to last for any length of time. And I know one thing, like, sort of in the future, but since I'm not watching everything and reading every solicit, I feel like that doesn't connect to this. So I really don't know also, like, what the long-term plan is here.
Aren't we good? We're just going to read the story.
I know. How about that? Just enjoy the stories as a story. What a concept.
All right. Let's get the rabbit on. Andrew, Kevin, and I are back with our second Mark Spector Moon Knight segment. The first being 2 episodes ago on episode 384, where we covered the first 7. Well, this time we've got issues 8 through 14, which ran from September 1989 to March of 1990. These consist of a two-parter teaming up Moon Knight with the Punisher, then a done-in-one-ish, and 2 two-parters that kind of combine into one larger 5-issue arc, if you can stick with me on that. It's written by Chuck Dixon with art by Sal Velluto and inks by Tom Palmer and Mark Farmer.
I'm taking out my axe of vengeance.
What we've established so far is that Moon Knight's back and that Mark Spector is focusing on being himself. He's dropped the Stephen Grant and Jake Lockley guises, and with it his contacts on the street like Crowley and hanging out at Gina's Diner and that stuff.
Does he still go by Matches Malone, Steve?
Frenchie, though, his old comrade in arms and pilot partner, is back, as is his on-and-off-again love interest, Marlene. He also has a hip new maid physical therapist, Chloe, and the son of a former foe, Midnight, who wants to be Moon Knight's partner, sidekick, that round out his supporting cast. So with Midnight tagging along and Moon Knight ignoring the supernatural and focusing on street crime, Dixon really is presenting Moon Knight as, like, Exhibit A in the argument that he's Marvel's Batman here, right?
And it's fine, funny enough.
Yeah, I thought these first ones, the banter doesn't really work. I think they're still trying to figure that out. Him and Midnight need to kind of iron it out. The sassy sidekick didn't quite scan to me yet. I think they're going to find their footing, but it was a little rough, their back and forth.
I thought it was kind of forced too, but it was also, I think, a shorthand into showing that Moon Knight is sort of tolerating Midnight being, like, you know, before he was like, no way in hell are you coming with me, and now it's like he's trying to kind of bring him along and be a little bit mentory.
Yeah, when he teams up with Superman, then he's all like, get lost, kid.
Issues 8 and 9 are loosely tagged with the Axe of Vengeance corner logo, since Moon Knight fights someone else's bad guy, which was, you know, the catch of the whole Axe of Vengeance event. But it's really not that tied into that event at all, because...
I mean, he mentions in the back, like, oh, things are going on in the city, but basically, like, you wouldn't really know.
Yeah, I mean, the reason he's fighting someone else's foe is because he stumbles upon the Punisher, who was watching an ultimatum caper that Captain America should have had his eye on and been on top of, but he's busy with the Axe of Vengeance thing, and then Moon Knight and the Punisher team up for 2 issues to deal with it. So it's like, you know, a tertiary, secondary threat because of Cap being indisposed with the Axe of Vengeance stuff.
Always loved the Flag Smasher. Such a fun, kooky villain, and the ultimatum guys with their berets and everything. It's like, yeah, they were always fun. I mean, but they are kind of a Cap. It's a weird hammering them into the Punisher Moon Knight corner. Like, some of those acts of vengeance were fun. This one felt a little weird.
Yeah, no, like I said, it was only loosely tied in, if that. You know, Moon Knight and Midnight are out on patrol with the banter going back and forth, as you said, and Moon Knight's taking a more careful, experienced, measured approach, taking in more information before he acts, and Midnight just wants to act, and he kind of impulsively throws them into a situation that they're like under fire from a bunch of ultimatum goons until the Punisher bails them out. And Kevin, I don't think he's using mercy bullets. That's like he's like sniper, you know, shooting people in the head.
Like, there was a lot of like shooting and everything, and I'm like, same thing here, but like, and he even makes comments about like Frenchie. I'm like, oh, he needs to get in so many kills. And while Mark's not going to do the killing himself, like, Frenchie can just go to town and wipe out a bunch of people.
I love that arbitrary, like, no, don't kill this one person. Yeah. We've killed 47 people, but don't kill this one. That means, they really can't balance this. I don't kill people, but all my partners kill people.
Yeah, I mean, he's allowed to. He has to, because if he doesn't get his fix of killing people, you know.
After the Punisher saves them and they figure out it's an ultimatum scheme, Moon Knight just sends Midnight home. He just leaves him there, like, on the street. Like, later, I got to go take care of this with the Punisher. This is a real thing. And then subsequently, I really enjoyed how Dixon characterized Spectre and Castle's interactions. And I guess I should say the art team, too. Visually, I was never really taken out of the flow of a action story, even though there was a couple of pages in a row at times of talking heads, you know? But their interactions are cool, because these guys are, or at least they were, pretty similar, you know? They're made up of the same stuff, and they respect each other for it.
And then they'll team up again. Well, we're almost into the 90s, right? So we're basically there. So, I mean, yeah, these guys are going to bump into each other.
The only problem I had was, like, Moon Knight's cape length frequently changes over the two issues in a sort of, you know, I guess an homage to Batman or Spawn or whatever. Like, it shrinks and grows. And I also did love the Marvel Comics billboard they drive by.
The Flag Smasher has this pretty badass female commando agent person who she's really capable. They pay a visit to a banker and kind of use him to lure out Ultimatum, and the plan works, but a little too well, because she kills the guy and then totally defeats Moon Knight and the Punisher, but then when the police come, she escapes.
Yeah, I couldn't quite tell. I thought this was supposed to be in New York City, Steve, but isn't it Anarchy in the UK? Character's name is Anarchy, by the way. You know, teaming up with the Flag Smasher to be kind of the heavy. So that was a pretty belabored joke.
I like how Flag Smasher is trying to bring about that Star Trek future.
Aren't we all? In issue 9, Moon Knight and the Punisher trace Ultimatum back to a warehouse compound, and Frenchie gets called in to destroy the weapons convoy from the air.
Oh, no!
While Moon Knight and the Punisher storm the facility.
What a time to be reading about a convoy.
We got a great big convoy.
And then at one point they're like, there's a bunch of fanatics down there with their convoy. And I'm like, oh boy, boy, boy howdy.
I think Dixon writes a pretty good Punisher too for the first time out, with how he uses the Punisher's inner monologue with the caption boxes and everything, because it's Moon Knight's comic. So reading the Punisher's inner thoughts would seemingly be out of place, but when he's narrating what he sees and thinks of Spectre's actions, it works pretty cleverly and perfectly.
Punisher's War Journal. I'll never see Maria again. No. Yeah, I thought it was a fun... because they're also pushing this thing forward. It still has that decompressed pacing that I'm a fan of. Yeah. So I think for your modern comic reader, it may seem that they move at a dizzyingly kind of silly quickness, but that's an era that I'm down with, that kind of like, bam, 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 bam.
Sure.
We're going to wrap this up in two issues.
Especially when you're reading monthly, you know, you don't want it to drag on for half a year. The plan... No,
it's funny, the Punisher. He's like, I could have shot these guys, but Moon Knight wants to do it himself. This guy is good.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, that's kind of fun to see what he thinks of Moon Knight, and you realize, all right, well, you're reading Moon Knight's book, so that it makes sense that the narrative be about him rather than it being the editor saying what he's doing or how skilled or capable he is. Their plan is they were storming the compound was for the Punisher to take on the Flag Smasher and Spectre deal with the Girl Commando, the Anarchy. But Flag Smasher sneaks up on Moon Knight while the girl pins down the Punisher with gunfire. Totally swapped enemies on them. Acts of vengeance.
She should be wearing a belt that has the other, like, other continents on the belt, because since he has the North South America.
That would be good.
I thought maybe the Anarchy symbol would have been a prime choice.
The Punisher, even though he's pinned down, he's got a grenade up his sleeve, so he's out of trouble. And man, Moon Knight, he does really well versus Flag Smasher until Punisher shows up and gets in his way. And Flag Smasher escapes in a speedboat. Very James Bond villainy. Moon Knight takes down the girl. Moon Knight's doing everything here. And he won't let the Punisher off her while she's unconscious. You know, chivalry and all that.
Yeah, well, even though they murdered like 80 dudes the last few panels. But no, I think the real reason is, Steve, she has a name. And the nameless goons, they're not even human. You can kill as many of those as you want. But if you name a character, they're for real.
The Punisher chases Flag Smasher in a boat, and Moon Knight does the same via the helicopter and ladder, rope ladder. He swings down and really kicks butt. But the Flag Smasher gets the upper hand and has Moon Knight by the cape tipped over backwards, where he can see that they're about to crash into a big structure. So Moon Knight cuts off his own cowl and jumps into the water just before the boat hits, and kablooey. And the Punisher trolls up in a timely manner for a rescue.
Yeah, I like this era too, because the guys are big guys, but they're still somewhat plausible. I mean, maybe not. They're kind of bodybuilder, but they're not like that freakish, like, oh my God, that's not even human anatomy type of thing. They're just like big, like they look like a linebacker or something like that. You know what I mean? They haven't reached the like... Wait, what muscles are those?
Yep. The muscles have muscles.
I came out of these two issues thinking that Dixon should write this Punisher character someday.
Yeah, it's like he's auditioning for that or something.
Spoiler,
but
he does.
He should give him a sidekick, like Punisher Jr. or something, so he can keep working that sweet banter between.
Issue 10 is... it's a real clunker. It's a one-off that... I think stands poorly on its own, but I think it's helped some if you kind of think of it loosely as part one of the next four subsequent issues, because of the big event with lasting effects that happens at the end and carries forward as a ongoing subplot.
Well, it's just funny. These guys are not even B-listers, but then they keep on pretending that they're so good and they're so hot and everything, and then they're trying to convince Moon Knight that, oh, you're a B-lister, and I'm like, well,
how dare you, Kevin? Killer Shrike's part of the Air Force. Oh,
yeah, that's right.
From New Warriors. So how But I like, I don't know, I enjoy a good street level mixing it up with powered heroes, because so often, you know, all these guys are duking it out that can swing planets or whatever. It's nice to get some goofy guys with what would be pretty impressive powers. In the Marvel Universe, they're kind of losers or whatever, but in the real world, yeah, if you're a regular person and some guy's got super strength or can shoot electric whips or whatever, you're not gonna, it's gonna be bad for you.
Yeah, you don't want a guy to throw rings at you.
Yeah, he'll run rings around you.
I think Dixon takes the likely demand from the editor for an Axe of Vengeance tie-in and kind of gives him what he wants, but also takes the time to tell a story about, like, smaller event, like the little people, you know. Moon Knight's shown helping regular folks in trouble across a lot of this issue. He saves a jumper who is committing suicide and some kids from a burning building, and they go out of their way to show that he is taking the time to really connect with people's humanity in a way that you don't usually see him care. He, you know, he shares thoughts with the jumper. The kids are totally afraid of him and won't come into his arms, so he takes his mask off to show him that he's a person underneath, that kind of thing, to gain their trust. I thought it was cool moments, even if they weren't necessarily Moon Knight-y moments.
Well, it's nice to have him be street level, you know, more like a old Spider-Man comic where he stops some mugger or something to help people out.
Now, on the Axe of Vengeance front, Killer Shrike is turning over cars looking for trouble and is joined by the Ringer, the second Ringer, who he calls Ringo. And they in turn get joined by a chick with electric whips called Coach Whip, not to be confused with Cool Whip, Kevin.
I think it's just so funny that Coach Whip's power is awful a lot like Whiplash, which is who Killer Shrike looks like. I used to get those two, because, you know, the weird top knot business and everything is not a common look.
This trio of baddies really serendipitously cross Moon Knight's path and quite literally cut him off from his copter. And so they fight. And they fight for like 10 pages. Moon Knight handles Ringo and Coach Whip well enough, but Shrike is tough, guys.
Super strength is no joke.
He has some juice.
Frenchie helps out from above with the copter's weaponry, and Shrike blasts the copter, and Frenchie crashes. So the rest of the time, Spectre's trying to, like, clear them out as fast as possible so he can get to Frenchie and assess, you know, what happened there. And on the last page, he finally reaches the copter, and Frenchie's in bad shape.
He needs a code name for Frenchie, too. If he's worried about his secret identity, he can't be going around yelling Frenchie.
Well, that's not his real name. That is his code name.
People are going to look up that, like, Frenchie is a mercenary that works.
He's Jean-Marc.
Besides, that mustache has to be pretty easy to ID, Steve.
Issues 11 and 12 open with Frenchie in the trauma unit of a hospital. He nearly dies, but he's stabilized, and he'll live, but he may never walk again.
Uh-oh. How's he going to get back into that copter?
But I like the speed of it. Again, that compressed, like, he's already in rehab by the second one of those. You know what I mean? Like, they're not dragging this out like it's one life to live or whatever, and he's going to be on the ventilator for six seasons or something.
Oh, I was thinking he's going to spend half the issue crawling across the floor to get up or something.
No, but that's his favorite go-to story about how he dragged himself across the desert injured. Meanwhile, in Burunda, remember that place?
Freedom Town?
Spectre's arch nemesis Bushman is shown listening to an offer from a drug cartel, actually multiple drug cartels, to farm poppies and heroin and stuff in Burunda. And he likes their idea so much that he kills them all and decides to just do it himself.
Yeah, I seem to remember griping that I thought one of Moon Knight's problem was lack of a deep bench of a rogues gallery, and here we are, year two, like, well, we better bring Bush, you know, like, we can't let him go without fighting this dude once a year or whatever. Like, come on, we can now have Killer Shrike as one of his big bads. Like, we can,
you know,
build this up.
Killer Shrike will be back in Chuck Dixon's run. So there's more to that than you realize. But, you know, I was thinking about when you said that last time, and part of the problem is that Moon Knight kills a lot of his villains so that they don't have a chance to come back a second time.
Yeah, but they can do better than having one guy. You need a couple of them. Even if they can have it be Legacy, like the next dude, like Midnight Sun could try and go after him instead of wanting to be his sidekick.
Give you want a guy to show up? I'm Midnight 15.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I've killed 14 of you already.
You're just foreshadowing here. You're just foreshadowing. Telling you. The wreck of the Mooncopter is in the police impound yard.
If it's impounded, so many things tie back to him. And then even in here again, it's like, does everyone know I'm Moon Knight? And I'm like, how is he going to get this thing out of the impound if the controls are fused? He's not going to just be able to fly it away right away.
Moon Knight and Midnight sneak in to survey its condition, but it's a trap. Actually, I thought this was a pretty well-executed dramatic scene where, you know, the inexperienced Midnight wonders what this little red dot is on his chest, and Moon Knight's like, whoa!
I'm like thinking that's not a good, hey, I wonder where this came from, and I'm like, oh no.
Yep.
Oh no, dude.
They're being attacked by a well-armed guy in a weapons suit who's calling himself Arsenal. And to your point of the Rogues Gallery, Andrew, in Moon Knight Volume 1, the first series, issues 17 through 19, written by Doug Munch with the Sienkiewicz art and everything, back at the beginning of 1982, those issues had an old friend of Spectre's from the Israeli Secret Service contacting him for help regarding an organization called the Third World Slayers, led by Nimrod, don't call me Hugo, Strange, even though in the issue they call him Hugo Strange a couple of times by accident, which is really funny.
Wow.
But it's all hands on deck. Frenchie and Marlene join in, and it's like this international thriller, these three issues. It ends with Moon Knight storming Nimrod Strange's compound, but he dons a suit of weaponry and dubs himself Arsenal. And I think it's notable that arc, not only because here's another case of them doing another take on an old Moon Knight villain, right? They've done Midnight, they've done Bushman, they've done the voodoo stuff, and now Arsenal, all stuff that was in the first series. And what are we, only on issue number 11? So I don't think they're doing too bad in touching base with Moon Knight's old mythology and Rogues Gallery. But this whole Mark Spector Moon Knight series is like what this three-issue arc in the first series, this issue 17 through 19, was like. It was like this international, an old thing related to Spector, not a Moon Knight thing, related to his past, draws him into this globe-hopping thing where he's using his Spectre abilities, and it was just there was something interesting about that arc, and I kind of feel like, for good and bad, this whole Mark Spector Moon Knight run is kind of like a nod to that arc. I think that's one of the things that Dixon might have looked at and said, like, oh, we can expand on this and do a take like this. This would be interesting.
See, this was a perfect example, Steve. He fights Arsenal. He could fight, like, Man United, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspurs. Like, his whole thing is a rogues gallery of British football club names. Wow. You know, like, that's where you lead in. We need the gimmicks. And that way you're always like, oh, yeah, that's who he fights.
But this guy is a cocky, mouthy blonde crew-cutted guy calling himself Arsenal, and Moon Knight's like, Nimrod Strange is dead, and he acknowledges knowing who Nimrod Strange was and says he's the new version, Arsenal 2, basically.
Yeah, I feel like he's a mash of, like, if you took one of those, like, Luke Cage villains and kind of 90s'd him up a little bit, yeah, you know?
Right.
This guy didn't show up here for a team-up.
Yeah, Flechette or one of the, you know, those kind of gimmicky dudes. But I'm down with it. You know, we need these mercenary types that are bad. Because like you say, it ties into his past as a mercenary. And it's going to be about redeeming his bad past.
And yeah, even if you're pretty good with the fighting or you have some kind of armor or something... Probably just don't let yourself get shot by all these weird weapons and everything, like needles and all that. Like, you might want to avoid some of that stuff.
Needle guns. He would have
went way more psychedelic in the last 10 years. He would have been shot with some needles and then gone into some weird headspace for a while.
That's basically what happens, although it's Karari here, right? Or... We see Moon Knight with a bow again, though, which is always cool.
And yeah, I like that how he breaks out of, like, a crossbow or a bow and arrow or whatever.
And that was cool because he, like, reached into the wreckage of the copter to grab a weapon, you know, because he knows where it is, obviously. And that impresses Arsenal, who is also obviously an experienced merc. And I don't think this isn't a coincidence, and it's kind of the point of this book, that Moon Knight is Mark Spector, and Spector was an awesome soldier. I mean, it used to be that Spector was the last thing that Moon Knight wanted to relate to about himself and acknowledge and be. He was hiding Spector, you know? He was Stephen Grant at home, he was Lockley when he was out on the street, or he was Moon Knight. And now Moon Knight is clearly the mask. I mean, he's Spectre, whether he's in the mask or not. And he accepts it when we're used to see him try to push it to the side. And, I mean, we're supposed to be impressed at Moon Knight's capabilities in the field here, right alongside Arsenal in this issue or the Punisher a couple of issues ago. Arsenal's got friends with him who apprehend Midnight. And as you said, Kevin, he bests Moon Knight by way of tranquilizing needles that he shoots him with over and over and over.
Yeah.
Issue 12 has Spectre learning what Arsenal wants with him. He released Midnight and sent him home. Everybody sends him home.
Apparently.
And he knows Spectre's identity, and he actually wants his help with a mission. He says he's working for the DEA and they want to take down a drug operation that's developing in Barunda. They basically want help to take down Bushmen. And if Spectre says no, then those IRS troubles his corporation's been dealing with will get ratcheted up. And if he helps, they'll magically go away. Not that he needed to be persuaded beyond saying Bushmen. And Arsenal's got this team of four other mercenaries, and a couple of them Spectre remembers and clearly doesn't like.
Yeah, it's not Fancy Dan and Ox.
Bushman is shown...
Those guys are more competent than these guys.
Yeah,
definitely. Bushman's shown displaying his new fields, having reduced the town that had been there to rubble, and is pretty clear that they didn't warn or evacuate the residents.
I think we set that up before about how he deals with things.
Yeah. Spectre escapes his lodgings and calls Frenchie to check in with his contacts and see if the DEA is funding, you know, Arsenal, and finds out that they aren't. So he figures it's probably, you know, the drug lords that he shot up their emissaries trying to get revenge and stuff. So Moon Knight returns and takes out all the other mercs with ease, although Arsenal is tougher. They fight for three pages, and Moon Knight really does get the better of Arsenal, but he pulls the Punisher's move. Grenade! That covers his escape, although he escapes right into the hands of the authorities.
Oh, no.
I do like his parting shot about calling the Scooby Gang the Beagle Boys. It's a pretty hard insult.
And the issue ends with Moon Knight declaring that he's going to go take down Bushman anyway. On his own. His way.
Just for
fun.
You know
he wants to.
So issues 13 and 14 have Moon Knight traveling to Berunda again to take on Bushman again. The last time it was to rescue Marlene, but this time it's to pretty much destroy his operation and see him ousted as leader for life.
Yeah, support the rebels.
Na 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 leader.
I was thinking more Star Wars. Those gutsy young rebellion. He has to find Princess Leia Organa, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
There is this homegrown revolution that's fighting in Berunda, and Moon Knight's going to help them oust Bushman. They have a blind old lady who sees visions and even sculpt Moon Knight's bust in a vision and calls him Khonshu, which was cool.
Yeah, well, when he teams up, like Kevin joked, it's not Fancy Dan or Ox, but it's Montana that he...
I kind of hoped it was going to be Montana that we knew, but nope. They're led by a former Air Force officer, these militant rebels, but their only airship is a helicopter that's flown by a Western mercenary who's this cowboy named Montana. And all Moon Knight hears is, "Did you say helicopter?" You know, you're like, "Ah, oh, cool. Moon Knight knows his way around these." So
all I could think, Steve, was Dental Floss Tycoon.
Sure.
Midnight could have run that helicopter, like riding a car or a helicopter. It's really transferable skills.
Arsenal is in the paddy wagon with the team he puts together and escapes in grand fashion in his underwear. But he leaves the other mercs there. "You guys suck." And then heads down to Berunda, too, to make sure that the job gets done of getting Bushman out of there, and he wants to kill Spectre.
Of course.
Moon Knight and Montana go airborne and torch Bushman's drug crop and leave him a message to make sure that he knows it's Spectre, which really pisses Bushman off. I haven't even tried
to write your name in the field and everything like a Hollywood movie.
Right. It's like peeing your name in the snow.
Yeah.
He's like, "I haven't even tried to kill Spectre in months. Why is he here?" And he's tweaking out, Bushman is. He kills this admiral just so this other guy can handle his own request, making him be admiral now. He assembles his own troops to comb the jungle for the rebels. And then it's like, "Oh, forget about the rebels. Find Spectre. Get me Spectre. Anything to get Spectre." Arsenal shows up in Berunda too, blasting through a border checkpoint with lots of big boom. And in the jungle, Moon Knight and the rebels plan their assault on Bushman's capital, and they send troops to, like, wait in position for the signal. And during the prep, there's this other sequence that also suggests what this series is really all about, I think, because Montana says to Moon Knight, "You know, you put me down for being a merc, son, but don't tell me you don't miss this action." And Moon Knight answers, "Lord help me, but I do." And that's really what this book was, as I envision it. He wasn't serving Khonshu. He was just accepting and developing who he always was, but often ignores. He's Spectre. It's not what I would always want a Moon Knight series to be, but I wasn't as horribly put off as others who really just wanted to return to the Munchsienkiewicz stuff.
Yeah, and in a direction that's not to my liking. Like, they really go hard into some of those other aspects of what they like from that original run.
And you know how long it is before we get another, like, a good Moon Knight series? You know what I mean? Like, Kevin, after this series ends in the mid-90s, and it really gets bad towards the end after Dixon goes and the editor starts writing the book. then there, in 98 and 99, there was a couple of four-issue limited series that Doug Munch wrote, right? Tommy Lee Edwards draws one, and Tex, Mark Texeira, draws the other.
And those... isn't there like sort of like a Marvel Knights type of...
Yeah,
isn't that around there?
Yeah, I think that's what that is, the High Strangers one. But then it's not until 2006 that there's another Moon Knight series, and it's the Houston Finch one.
Yeah.
But then after that, in 2009 and 2010, was that Greg Hurwitz one that had the Opeña art, The Vengeance of the Moon Knight? I thought that was like the beginning of the better modern Moon Knight series.
Yeah.
I mean, after that, it was the Bendis Maliev.
He usually had good artists, so, I mean.
Because after that Hurwitz one, it was the Bendis Maliev. All right, that one wasn't so good. But then it's right into the Ellis Shalvey and the Wood Smallwood stuff. And then Lemire
Smallwood. Yeah, some issues.
Right, right. Those were all good, I thought. So,
yeah.
It's really the Hurwitz Vengeance of the Moon Knight in 2009. I mean, we're talking decades of misses on the Moon Knight stuff. So there's some of this stuff that I can take and enjoy because at least it's reflecting a part of the character that is true to the character. And he just always was ignoring it and trying to hide and run from it. And here he was getting right into it.
This is like the reverse New Warriors where you jokingly were like, oh, what about the good issues? As we keep reading this, I keep on wondering, when are we getting to the bad issues?
I'm glad you're enjoying it, because there's... we laugh, because behind the scenes, the other, you know, the number two Moon Knight fan in the world, Andrew Shaw, he hates this series, but...
I know, I was like, what? He's like, stay away!
You know, there's some enjoyable stuff here, and I had just, as I said in the last segment when we covered this, I had just gotten back into reading comics again, and the fact that there was a Moon Knight book on the stands at all was a nice thing for me, that it's like, oh, cool, some Moon Knight to read too, along with my Silver Surfer with Thanos stuff. It helped me get back into it.
Yeah, Moon Knight was one of those characters where I was like, definitely buy some issues off the shelf. I'm like, he's cool, or he showed up in Spider-Man or whatever, and I'm like, I want to read it. And then you read a few issues, and you're like, yeah, I like the character and everything, but this isn't working out. It's sort of like Doctor Strange. Like, I'm like, Doctor Strange seems cool. I want to read some of his ongoing book. And I didn't stick around too long there either.
I got some good Doctor Strange for you in the future. But part of this, reading this, was I wanted you to read these, because it really, there was stuff in here that I thought would be not only appealing to you, but good for your Moon Knight knowledge, because you really like Moon Knight. Too.
Yeah, you can fill in those holes.
So before Moon Knight and Montana can get airborne with the rebel commander guy, Bushman shows up with these airships and starts gunning them down and actually kills the rebel leader before he can get on board. And Moon Knight's all, no!
Uncle Ben, no!
Montana is able to escape Bushman by flying into a storm and safely crashing the copter, but now him and Moon Knight are on the ground and they got to make their way through the jungle without being caught by Bushman and his forces.
And it's interesting that they chose his main villain to have his main jam being obsessed with the hero, which is always a neat thing. Like, you can be like, they want power, or they want this, or they want money or whatever, but his is like this monomania, need to defeat Moon Knight and his inability to. So that part, you know, that's a way to motivate your main guy.
Because he inadvertently created Moon Knight when he tried to kill Spectre the first time. You know, and now he's a thorn in his side. So it's built right into the character for sure.
Yeah, because we see him, it costs him his, you know, Moon Knight's able to play on that to allow the side rebel forces to inflict damage because he's so obsessed with going after Moon Knight. You know, we see them fritter away. Normally it's the other way around where the main protagonist fritters away their resources pursuing some goal.
And like we said in the last segment, other than issue 1 and like 9 and 10 of the original Moon Knight series, Bushman didn't come back. Like, he wasn't someone who kept coming back until these two stories, the one we covered the last time and these ones. So it was kind of a big deal to have Bushman come back. Arsenal hooks up with the rebels outside the capital and leads their assault to victory. Only they don't have a leader. But that's all right. They've got the capital. So Moon Knight and Montana can kind of taunt their pursuers that, you know, they've lost control of the capital, and now they can focus, instead of trying to make it to the capital to help, they can just try to get out of there. So now they're just headed for the border.
Run for the border, Steve. Yep. Seems like an excellent Taco Bell tie-in they missed the chance of.
It's right over there, the border, you know. It's just beyond this clearing.
But I do like how Moon Knight can always just house this guy. Like, he just got the crap beat out of him by some flunky in Ultimatum. But, like, yeah, his big bad is never a problem. Like, Anarchy took out him and Punisher, but big bad Bushman here, he can never win.
He's in Bushman's head, that's why. Because, you know, Bushman shows up and with the forces and prevents them from crossing the field to get to the border, and does the honor duel thing again, and Moon Knight beats his ass again. And the army turns on Bushman and takes him under gunpoint away, and he's all, Spectre!
Yeah, because who wouldn't want nunchucks against two giant swords?
Then Moon Knight and Montana walk from Burunda through at least one other entire country to cross over into Wakanda.
See, I didn't know if that was a Wakandan embassy. I thought maybe.
Oh, maybe. And that's, there's no,
you know, when you go into their embassy, you're technically on
the
soil of. So I assumed they maybe just made it to the embassy, right, and they were like, once you're on the embassy, then you're in Wakanda.
All right. So, and Kevin, you
I
decide.
I don't see Burunda taking on Wakanda.
Who wins the no prize? Because Burunda does not border Wakanda as per the Marvel Atlas and some other sources. So my thought was that they had to walk across at least one other sovereign nation so that they could cross into Wakanda. And Andrew says they're crossing into an embassy. Both fit the bill of solving it no prize style.
Yeah, I like Andrew's explanation. Yeah, me too. yeah, I mean, that works.
And Moon Knight uses his Avengers membership card for entry, which is a nice nod that Dixon, you know, hasn't forgotten that he was an Avenger.
Yeah, I remember that 90s cover too with the Avengers card.
It's part of who he is.
Yeah.
Too many Avengers, Steve.
On the last page, Marlene meets Mark at the airport gate, hugs him a little too tight because of his injuries, but she says she's committed and now nothing can go wrong.
Yeah, it seems like a good place to wrap up the series.
And then the next issue blurb starts, next issue, everything goes wrong. And I like how the Wakandan Air logo is like a black cat crossing their path. And because next issue starts a four-part arc that is the trial of Mark Spector.
So I guess those are going to be the next four we're going to cover.
But Kevin, look, Spider-Man, Silver Sable, and the Wild Pack, the Paladin, and Sandman guest starring too. How fun is that?
Wow, that seems ideally made.
Every Marvel mercenary has to appear in the book now, Steve. That's the hook.
Yeah, that works. Why not? Yeah. Come on. I mean, this isn't as good as the Munch era. That's my favorite. I mean, and it's not as clever as like the Mr. Knight era and since then and everything, but shoot, it's better than him being an Avenger or just being not used on the shelf, you know, which is what this series did for Moon Knight. It got him off the shelf and took him away. He had just been a West Coast Avenger and not used for like the last 6 years, so this was like a palate cleanser to get him back to some action and get him back to really basics.
Yeah, I like the mix of like James Bond intrigue, street level.
Yes.
kind of not as well done, but echoes of like a John Sable sort of character.
Yes.
But in the Marvel universe, so you have all those other things. That's always, like, it's neat. You have this whole world. Why just stay in New York City? And that part's fine. He's got the money. He can fly all over the place. And because he's not, you know, Thor or some superpowered person, it makes the challenges more interesting.
I like and he it. Hasn't run into Jack Russell yet.
Not in this series yet. I almost think of him as a parallel to the types of adventures with the international touch, like as like the Shadow, like when the Shadow would do international type espionage adventures and things.
The Shadow was a bit more skilled. I thought more John Sable because he would get beat up a little bit.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
I felt like the Shadow was one of those super competent, like,
yeah,
he always was in command even when he was kid. Like, yep, he was always in your head type of thing, where this guy, he's always going to be bruised and beat up a little bit. I mean, he's going to win, but he's going to have, you know, scars and limps and all that stuff to let you know that, like, he, you know, more of the Indiana Jones style. Like, he wins, but he's not whistling out of there.
Sounds like the Shadow was Batman.
I think that this approach does work for a Moon Knight book. I just think Moon Knight can be better if you add in some of the other fun stuff, too.
Yeah, I mean, if this had just a little sprinkling of the Khonshu stuff, I mean, that would pretty much be the perfect book.
I'm glad you're enjoying it, Kevin. This tickles me to no end.
Yeah, well, after that whole Nova situation.
Oh, come like, on.
I'm sorry I keep bringing that up, Steve, but that's like my go-to now.
Was it that bad?
Like, it's something that I thought would work out and just didn't work out.
Yeah, Kevin Poor feels Marv. That the unresolved Caps storyline is what it haunts him, Steve. You know, we're hoping that Caps will turn up in one of these series and we'll get the closure we all need.
Writers shouldn't edit their own books, right? All right. Thank you guys for doing another installment of reading this book, because I've been wanting to read this series, well, reread it, for like a couple of years now. So this is really fun. I think we can cover the rest of the Dixon run in another maybe 3 sittings like this, if you're up for it.
Sounds good. And I have some issues beyond then, too.
We could talk about that if we get that far. All right. Thank you, listeners. Until Khonshu moons Marlene, make mine Marvel. Later.
And the red and the white and the blue will come through when Captain America throws his